We're actually told that we have more cameras than they do by quite a bit, so that's sort of interesting. And you know what? That's really in honor of our vets, but they have been. They've been very nice, and they wanted me to go and apologize and everything else, and they did apologize, and they could not have been. But once this started, it's for our vets. There was nothing I could do.
This has got to be a very entertaining show that goes on in Trump's head. I wonder how long it takes to light it. 6:42, CNN reporting this morning that of the alleged $6 million raised by Trump's veterans event in Iowa days before the caucuses, that $800,000 has been collected so far. Now, I'll tell you, I do a lot of charitable events, and it takes a while to collect money, but when the checks are large checks and the event is described and sold the way it was, it should take about 24 to 48 hours. No response yet on the Trump campaign, but as Chuck Todd, the proud proprietor of Meet the Press, joins us. I guess, Chuck, I'd rather start, if you don't mind, with Hillary. Nobody looks forward to going to the orthodontist, so what's this nonsense about how the campaign looks forward to hearing what the email server setter-upper guy is going to say today?
Yeah, exactly. What else are they going to say? You know, if he's got a deal, there's not much they can say. So, of course, they don't want to attack somebody that could turn into a hostile witness for some reason. So, there really is not much else. Look, we'll see. I think a lot of it has to do with, you know, you would assume, as somebody who set up the server, he would have understood the circumstances with which it was done, and he would have understood, perhaps have a better explanation of why, you know, why it was done, and was it done, was his job to create the complicated aspect of this, which, look, I always thought that this always looked like an attempt to avoid FOIA, okay, the Freedom of Information Act. Yeah. There's no other reason to do it. It is harder to set up a server at your house. This is not more convenient. It's less convenient.
Right.
All right. Who wants to deal with IT problems at their house?
Right.
It's sort of the beauty of work. You want to outsource it to the IT guy at your office.
Yeah, and the IT guy living at your house who you go to say, hey, I know you're watching my TV now, but I got a problem in the bathroom with the server. And yeah. He goes, yeah, I can't fix that. I'll get to it tomorrow.
Yeah, no, I mean, it just that's why this has always been. So I think, you know, what does he know about the reasoning behind having this server at her house?
And you know, the TV movie of the week question, right? If you have nothing to hide, then you don't need to ask for immunity. So therefore, mm-hmm. the assumption and presumption that there is something to hide is, right. is kind of a natural human instinct for the rest of us.
Exactly. And it's pretty, you know, it was, you know, the Clinton campaign's trying to portray it as a younger gentleman who's scared of the process, is worried suddenly maybe he did do something wrong. And he didn't know it. You know, one theory I heard is that, you know, his lawyer spun him up and said, well, even if you didn't knowingly set this up to have as a vehicle to deal with classified information, you could get held accountable. So there are viable explanations I've gotten from Clinton defenders on this that explain why this guy panicked and asked for immunity. But it still looks bad.
Is this going to linger for months?
you say as if it hasn't already.
Yeah, exactly.
You know,
well
I
said.
Mean, yeah, I mean, it's lingered. It's going to, you know, it was an interesting story I read today about how some prosecutors feel as if, you know, veteran prosecutors say that the, you know, FBI is basically damned if it does, damned if it doesn't. The closer it gets to the presidential, you know, basically, you don't, if there's information to be known that will impact the election, it's not good if you withhold it. At the same time, there's discomfort in having information that can impact the election in a way that maybe you didn't intend to do. So it's a real box that the FBI is in.
I got to do a quick traffic here, but I got to ask you about Romney Fest 2016 later today and the growing chorus of Republicans mm-hmm. who want to say that Donald Trump is not only not my guy, I won't support him no matter how much you waterboard me. Stand by for that. Before we get to that, though, Adam Chappelle, give me a quick traffic update.
On the southbound side of I-57, we have a crash on 119th Street blocking the center lane. As for your travel times, Kennedy, 43 minutes O'Hare to downtown, Ike, 48 in from Thorndale, Stevenson, an hour in from 355, Dan Ryan, 25 in from 95th. Traffic's brought to you by Whole Foods Market. Stock them on healthy and save today at your local Whole Foods Market. Get fresh asparagus for just $2.49 per pound through Tuesday. Visit Whole Foods Market, America's healthiest grocery store. Adam Chappelle, WGN Traffic Central.
Chuck Todd's with us. Meet the Press. You got a plug for Sunday?
Not yet. Still in the oven. Mid booking stages. Exactly. We're trying to figure that. A bunch of the presidentials are in town Friday and Saturday for CPAC. So we'll see how many of them can get to show up to my set. So we'll work on that.
There is a insurrection in the Republican Party inside the Republican. You know, it's almost like that old horror movie thing. We trace the call. It's in the House. And the Republican Party infighting, it would be hard to imagine a situation where you go, well, there's our front runner. He's the last guy we're going to support. But that's what's going on.
That's exactly what's going on. And they have 12 days now to do this. And it's a reasonable shot they have of at least getting to a situation where they can deny him a majority of the delegates he needs. But it all begins and ends with making sure he doesn't win Florida and Ohio. If he just wins one of those two states, the math points in Trump's direction. But if they can prevent him from winning both of those states, suddenly the math is a lot more complicated for him. And they will have succeeded in at least step one of their plan, which is to deny him the nomination and hope to start a fight on the floor. But still denying him the nomination, if he's the guy with the most votes, the most delegates, even if he's short, that could cause quite the fight. But it is amazing. I've seen this morning there was essentially every independent group that has money that's in the Republican camp has been told run a negative ad against Trump, and it appears that's what they're doing. It is unbelievable the amount of stuff now being thrown at Trump when 6 weeks ago you couldn't find any money being thrown at Trump.
And a lot of people are talking about, well, this isn't going to change anything in any way, shape, or form. People who live and breathe by Trump, I certainly agree with that, but isn't this stuff targeted towards the moderates, the undecideds, and the people that aren't even connected?
Oh, yeah, look, and you know, there's other reasons why it's realistic that they have a shot at stopping him. 8 of the next 13 contests are what are called closed contests. And what does that mean? It means that it's only registered Republicans are allowed to participate. Independents and Democrats can't cross over. And Donald Trump's done really well with independents and Democrats who have decided to come over to his side. And in states that allow for – that have an open primary, allow anybody to participate, Trump's won by bigger margins. And in places where there have been closed to just registered Republicans, he's – the majority of them he's lost. Oklahoma was a closed contest. Iowa was a closed contest. So, you know, and all of a sudden now 8 of the next 13 will be closed. So this weekend, 4 of them are closed. So I'll be curious to see if he loses more than he wins this weekend. That is, to me, a canary in the coal mine.
Chuck, it's interesting that you say that all of these, I guess, wealthy folks are taking out ads, negative ads, spending all kinds of money. We had the incident here with the Ricketts family, of course, spending, you know, $3 to $4 million on negative ads. You've covered this for a long time. Have you ever seen the amount of money being spent to not elect a candidate or you know what I mean? smear a campaign?
Well, I mean, yeah. I mean, we saw a lot of money spent against Barack Obama. So a lot of money spent against Mitt Romney in general elections, but to see it in a primary is sort of unbelievable. That's what's amazing. This is the type of thing you expect in a general election. You just don't expect this. But we've also never seen anything like this.
Mitt Romney, Congressman Kinzinger will be on with us after 7. He came out very strong. And by the way, he's a Rubio supporter, but he came out very strongly and said, I won't support Trump under any circumstances. I'll ask him about that again in a few minutes. In the meantime, Mitt Romney is coming out today to do what and say what?
To lay, you know, make the case against Trump, but that's it. I have to say, I feel like there's an ulterior motive behind this. It's sort of like, you know, hey, I'm here in case of emergency. And that's what it feels like, because I can tell you a lot of the campaigns aren't happy with what Romney's doing today. When I say a lot of the campaigns, I mean Rubio, Kasich, Cruz. They think that this is not as helpful as it could be if he endorsed somebody. It's not as helpful as it could be if he would, you know, focus his efforts at, you know, trying to throw money, you know, at the problem. You know, so there isn't an enthusiastic reception among the other candidates trying to stop Trump for what Romney's doing today.
Is there anything in Trump's tax return that could be the bombshell that Romney is talking about?
You mean Schedule M for mob? I mean,
come on.
I thought it was the dumbest allocation. I mean, say what you want about Trump. Don't you think if you're dealing with mob money, you don't put that on your tax return?
Of course. Oh, look, I'm putting down as a dependent Vinnie Boom Boom Knuckles.
Right. You know, yes, this is it's right there on page 4 of my income tax and Fat Tony Salerno. I mean, it was sort of, I guess, it was the ultimate, you know, we'll make them deny it, you know, type of allegation by Cruz on that one. But who knows what's in it? I mean, that's, you know, I have to say it's, don't we all hate that kind of politics where you sort of like make him deny it? Well, you know, he never said he didn't sleep with the, you know, the dead carcass. I mean, you know, it's just, it was, let's see the return. It's important that people see this stuff. We find out, you know, how much does he try to cut corners? How much, you know, who knows? I think the idea that you're audited every year, that's a red flag to me. You know, you get audited once and you correct it, but if you're getting audited every year, it means you're obviously always trying to cheat on your taxes.
Well, enough about me. The polls that were really less than reliable have seemed to be pretty strong in the last couple of weeks or so. Is there a way for Rubio to come back in Florida, barring things we don't know yet, aside from, and this is funny to me too, teaming up with Ted?
Well, right. Look, I think that Rubio's got a little bit of a struggle in this because he's not running for re-election. There's no Republican office holders, Republican establishment types in Florida. You know, Rubio's not going to be around anymore.
Right.
They have nothing to worry. So, you know, I think that's going to be a challenge for him, that people don't feel the need that they have to support him. I mean, the fact that the governor still hasn't come out. You know, there isn't this fear of retribution in the future because, hey, Rubio's going to be around a while. That's not there, that you saw a little bit with Cruz, right? That's why the governor came out for him in Texas and things like that. So I think that's a little bit of a setback. But I want to go back to something I said earlier about these closed and open primaries. The Florida primary is closed, only to registered Republicans. So I think the polling is overstating Trump. And that's something everybody needs to understand.
It's going to be a very interesting weekend, and I look forward to seeing you on Meet the Press on Sunday. And as always, thanks for the time, bud.
Thanks, Chief. See you, bud.
Chuck Todd, Meet the Press. NBC does a great job with Meet the Press. You got to remember, when Todd took over Meet the Press, David Gregory had just about tubed it. I mean, it was almost over. Thing had huge ratings problems. And Chuck Todd has brought it back, worked his butt off, too. He brought it back. There's a daily Meet the Press thing he does now. And he's just doing a really good job with it.
It's one of the best, I think, one of the best talk shows.
Now, if you see,
on TV,
of course. If you see Chuck publicly, be nice to him because he's got a twitch. Because he deals with these guys up close and personal way more than anybody else has to. It's more of a flinch than a twitch, I think.
They're chopping off people's heads in the Middle East, and we're afraid to waterboard. Give me a break, George. Give me a break. General Douglas MacArthur and General Patton are in their graves right now. They're spinning in their graves. They don't believe what they're seeing.
This is the Steve Cochran Show, live from the Allstate Showcase Studio.
WGN Chicago.
720 WGN.
I don't think he's wrong about that. I do think MacArthur and Patton are spinning in their graves. I mean, anybody of a significant position of leadership in the history of America to look at the nonsense that's going on, you'd go, really? Trump? Hillary? Really?
I don't think anybody could have anticipated that.
Congressman Adam Kinzinger joins us. Good morning, sir. How are you?
Hey, good morning. You're absolutely right. I mean, it's what a joke. And you know, for the leading Republican presidential candidate to advocate war crimes, which she does openly, just advocates war crimes, doesn't matter. It makes me sick, really, especially as somebody that's defended the country. It's terrible.
And I appreciate your service. You know that, I bring it up every time you're on. I will also say that a former director of the CIA, who will be a guest on this show coming soon, has actually written a second book, said very recently, if you go with the full scenario here, that Trump becomes president and he advocates killing the families of terrorists, that you would literally have soldiers and special ops stand down in the field.
Yeah, so we have an obligation. It's one of the first things you learn when you get in the military, which is the law of armed conflict. And it's basically, you know, we don't target civilians intentionally, you know, like the My Lai massacre in Vietnam, I mean, et cetera, down the line. And American soldiers have an obligation to disobey illegal war crimes. And even to the extent of, you know, if you're a private in the field and your major or your colonel orders you to do something that is a war crime, you actually bear responsibility. You can't say that, the colonel made me do it. So what the president of the United States or what Donald Trump as wanting to be president of the United States is advocating is a war crime that would force every soldier that did, i.e. killed the relatives of terrorists, tortured regardless of whether or not it worked, things that he's advocated would force all of these people in jail. Now, you have to do one of two things. You either believe that Donald Trump is all bluster, which most people do, but for some reason they like that, or you take him at his word, in which case he is advocating – you know, like what Benito Mussolini did, war crimes.
You are supporting Senator Rubio, but more importantly than that for this discussion, because this is really the discussion of the week with Romney speaking later today, you are one of the first Republicans to stand up and go, look, regardless of the circumstances here, I will not support Donald Trump. Has that changed?
Well, I basically said I can't see myself supporting Donald Trump. I never say, you know, definitively because, you know, who knows in the future. But, no, I have no intention of supporting Trump. If you take him at his word, I've said this. I put my country above my party any day of the week. I'm a Republican because I think the Republican Party for me is the best venue by which to make America strong and successful. Donald Trump is hijacking this party, and, you know, he may make people feel good because he yells and he reflects anger back, and he's a WWF wrestler, which he actually is, and he talks like a fourth grader, and for some reason that's attracting people, but look, as an American, as somebody that knows how serious the office of the presidency is, I can't put my name behind this guy. I don't care if it costs me. I don't care what the cost is. I'm not in this because of my political career. I'm in this because I love my country.
And there's 1,000 examples as to why. But I think a really important point to make is by having an opinion, a strong opinion, that Donald Trump is the worst case scenario to lead this country does not mean that I dislike or have no respect for the person that currently believes in him. All I would ask of Trump followers is to check the facts. If you're of a mind that there are no facts, there's only Trump, then, yeah, I can't convince you. But for those of you who are maybe leaning in his direction, please do your reading. Don't take Kinzinger's word for it. Don't take my word for it. Don't take anybody else's word for it. For the sake of you and your vote and how much it matters, look into everything that's been charged of Trump and see that there's fire where there's smoke.
And you know, that's the point is, yeah, it's not an attack on the followers. And all you have to do is go on Twitter, and it's kind of fun for me after I attack Trump and, you know, watch some of the things that are written. I mean, a lot of misspellings too. But, you know, you look at that and it's like, okay, there are some people that are utterly unable to be convinced. And that's fine. I get that. But there are a lot of people that say, you know, I've got friends and relatives that say, you know, hey, look, I get it. It doesn't make a ton of sense, but I'm just really angry and I need somebody to reflect my anger. I get that, right? I understand it. I think there's better candidates that can not only reflect your anger, but show you the way out of the anger. This guy is a con job. I mean, literally a con artist. And I'm not saying it to be mean. I'm saying it because, you know, he's one thing one day, another thing the next. Nobody knows what he believes. And he's wanted to be president since at least 2000 when he almost ran on the Reform Party. This isn't a guy that just felt compelled to get into politics all of a sudden.
Representative, do you think that this is almost, I don't want to say a wake-up call, but maybe a wake-up call to the party that some things need to change within the party and within the system because this is going to be the nominee?
There is a theory of that. There is a theory that this is going to blow up the Republican Party as we know it, and there's a time to do that, and maybe the time is now.
Look, I think that theory may be, you know, it bears some water. I hope that's not the case, but I think there is a time as a party to kind of figure out what it is we stand for, what it is we believe in. You know, look, I don't think that we've done a good enough job of defending what the party has done in Washington, you know, looking at the things that we've been able to stop from the president. People think that we can do more than we can, but, you know, constitutionally, there's not a ton you can do without the president signing something into law. I don't think we've made that case strong enough, and I understand that. And, you know, there's definitely some things we need to change. But the reality of it is this is a reaction to people being upset about President Obama's overreach, his perceived weakness in the world. But it's like this reaction is, I'm so angry, I'm going to cut my own arm off. And that's kind of what we're doing as a party by putting Donald Trump up there versus somebody that I think would be a solid, mature leader, worthy of the greatest statesman in the world.
I only got a short time here, but what are your feelings about the guy you're supporting, Rubio's chances to win his home state of Florida?
You know, I think probably okay. He's not in the best position there now, but there's going to be a lot of focus, a lot of attention, a lot of money spent. And I think Florida is going to see that, you know, the anti-Trump vote's going to have to consolidate behind them. So we feel pretty good, but it's, you know, I'd definitely rather be in Trump's position politically.
Appreciate your time. You want to follow Congressman Kinzinger. It's at Rep Kinzinger. Bring it positively or negatively. And the congressman responds when you get a hold of his office as well, because his number one concern is where it ought to be on your constituents, right?
That's right. That's right, brother.
All right. Thanks for being on. I appreciate it.
You bet. Take care, guys. See ya.
It's Congressman Adam Kinzinger. All right, 7:19. We got to get to traffic. We'll talk about that phone call, that interview, and shortly, Pat Brady and Eric Edelstein will join us. Right now, they're kumbayaing it up in the hallway. /7:23, there's nobody better than Rick Pearson, finest political writer in America, really throughout the galaxy. He joins us now, Chicago Tribune, ChicagoTribune.com, of course, and the Sunday Spin. You got a plug for that?
Yes, I do. Pat, the representative from Voices for Illinois Children will be on to talk about the continuing budget stalemate and how it's really deteriorating a safety net for a lot of at-risk youths. And also, I've got Roger Ruthart from the Moline Dispatch and Rock Island Argus to talk about the Madigan-Rauner proxy war that's going on in some of these legislative primaries.
Yesterday, Rahm Emanuel equated Governor Rauner with Donald Trump. You know, the governor was on last week with us, and I asked him, you know, what happened? What happened to that beautiful friendship? What happened, Peaches and Herb? Can we reunite the two of you? It doesn't sound like, you know, this to me goes beyond politics and we'll be fine down the road. You start throwing one of the most hated guys in America up against the guy that used to be your friend, that sounds like real bad blood to me, not politics.
Yeah, and the thing is that these two, despite their friendship, these two have always kind of had somewhat of an adversarial relationship, but it's only intensified, particularly as it comes to Chicago, the needs of the Chicago public schools, the governor's insistence on his turnaround agenda. And yeah, it really has turned into bad blood. The point that the mayor was making was that, and at first he didn't really even want to answer the question. It was asked, you know, do you compare these two? But he said his view was that he sees in Trump and Rauner that they're both divisive persons rather than bringing people together. And then, of course, the mayor quickly put in a plug for his presidential candidate, Hillary Clinton.
The divisive nature of the state of Illinois politics has been to some extent swept under the rug by the, you know, the bug light that is Donald Trump. So a lack of coverage outside of the fine work you guys have done at the Tribune, what we've tried to do here and what WGN News does as well. You know, if you're not talking about it, you're not covering it, the people aren't hearing about it, and then maybe they're looking the other way. How dangerous is that?
Well, no, you're absolutely right. And we're really, really, really getting to that critical point in Illinois, particularly when it comes to higher education. There were a couple of votes yesterday in Springfield on a plan backed by Democrats but opposed by the governor and Republicans to try to get some money to these struggling smaller public colleges and universities. Chicago State University, Western Illinois University, Eastern Illinois University. That plan failed by two votes on an override of the governor's veto in the House. Another plan will come up today in Springfield, be funded by forgiving a loan that the governor used to help patch budget holes in the previous year's budget. That one does not have the governor's support. It's unlikely Republicans will back that. Democrats will pass it. It'll go to the governor, probably to be vetoed.
We will have a set of grandparents on this show soon who have a grandchild who's specifically been impacted by no funding for a program that the youngster depends upon completely. Those stories are being replicated all over the state. Is there a more obvious tipping point as to when the public is up in arms over this?
Well, I think higher ed may be the tipping point. And, yes, you have all of these safety net social services, but for something that's very visible, if you have public colleges and universities shutting down, you know, we're at a time where, you know, kids and seniors in high school are looking about where to go to school, and you really have to wonder how many of them just staying in state to go to college is not an option for them. The risk is too great. And I think that's when it really impacts in people's lives in a large-scale sense. But there's no doubt that the safety net issue is it's a horrible, horrible situation. And we're at the point where you're not going to see a lot of these services that have been cut. The providers aren't going to be there anymore, even when there's any money to restore funding for them.
What are you covering over the next few days so we don't have to?
Well, we're now looking ahead to March 15th and the primaries today in the Tribune. We have our profiles on the three Democrats running for the Democratic U.S. Senate nomination to face Mark Kirk. We're also taking a look at the fact that if you put a Democratic ballot in the primary in many congressional districts and you're voting for Bernie Sanders and his delegates, you might run into a little bit of a ballot snafu because there's too many Sanders delegates on the ballot, and if you opt to scan your ballot, you'll probably kick out for an overvote.
Is that right?
Yes.
How do they clean that up?
Well, either it's a very complicated issue, but either you can back and cast a full ballot all over again and pick the proper number of delegates, or you just leave the ballot as is and not have those delegates counted in your ballot.
Wow. Musical delegates, maybe? If one delegate misses out on a chair, they can't stay and play?
You got it. That's exactly what it is.
The governor, of course, is welcome here at any time, as is Speaker Madigan. Ross, you're producing the show today. Have we heard from Speaker Madigan this morning? Oh, it sounds very quiet out there. Very, very quiet. Rick Pearson at Wrap 30, Sunday morning at 7 a.m. with the finest thing you're going to hear in politics, the Sunday Spin. He covers it so we don't have to. The campaign from hell continues next. Thank you, Rick.
Thank you.
729 and 720 WGN.
This is the Steve Cochran Show.
WGN Radio is the sound of Chicago.
720 WGN.
This is the 600th show. I haven't heard from Rom this morning. I assume that they've canceled the parade because of the flurries. Eric Adelstein's here. Pat Brady is here as well. Let's get the credits in. Eric, what's the name of your company?
AL Media.
And that's a front for money laundering mostly?
It is, and okay. For hair products.
Excellent. Yeah, I think I saw you at the meeting.
Yeah.
And Pat, what does your company do?
Next Generation Strategies, lobbying and public relations.
Okay. Let's start with the Hillary Clinton side of things, and that is this kid, as she calls it, this cute kid. You know, Bill and I, we had this cute kid come over. He's a little scared. He said the wrong thing. But he has now decided that in exchange for immunity, he's going to talk to the feds. Big deal, little deal, no deal.
I don't think it's a huge deal. I mean, I think there was the Clinton campaign is saying this morning they encouraged everyone to cooperate, including him. We've now seen the full batch of emails released. It seems as if her contention that she sent zero confidential emails, some of those that ended up in her email box that were then later designated might have been that. But this seems, again, to be a tempest in a teapot. I don't. There's been no suggestion of national security being violated, of crimes being committed, that it's inconsistent with what Colin Powell or Condoleezza Rice did. So I just don't see this as continuing to have legs.
And Prosecutor Brady?
Of course it does. You don't grant somebody immunity unless there is a criminal investigation, not a security investigation, as the Clinton campaign has redefined it. A couple things. Yes, there's been 2,000 emails that have been deemed classified. So at the very least, she's got an issue with that. I think the bigger story is, and that why they got have this kid coming to testify, is they got to figure out why she set this up. And as soon as that becomes apparent, the next step is probably going to be towards the Clinton Foundation, in my opinion. So I do believe this is a story that will continue.
Clinton Foundation story being what?
Being that this whole thing, Huma, her assistant, was working.
We prefer Uma.
Uma.
EHSO.
Uma, whatever, sorry. Yeah. Was working for the foundation and working for the State Department at the same time. The theory, the conspiracy theory, being that this whole Clinton Foundation, they were using her relationship or as Secretary of State to boost what they were doing at the Clinton Foundation. I mean, it's a pretty slimy thing.
Oh,
you kind of
what a tangled web we weave.
You know that scene in Annie Hall when he's talking about the Kennedy assassination and she says, I think you're using that to cover up for our sexual problems? We're not talking about Trump, are we?
Well, but here's the thing. And you guys are both practiced in the game of politics, and it is a game, for a very long time. If I'm your candidate and I've got stink on me, fair or unfair, and in this case it's the honesty question with Hillary, I want that over immediately. There's going to be people who are never going to believe Hillary Clinton's honest, but I want it done. I want it over now. Instead of letting this linger for months, why hasn't she slash he slash the campaign said, express lane this? I got 15 items or less. I want this out of the way if there's nothing that they don't want revealed.
We've had 25 years of the Clintons. They never do that. Had they done that in the 90s, a lot of that stuff probably would have gone away.
Well, then the trust question is always going to linger.
Their first thing is bunker mentality, you know, lie till you get away with it. And, you know, now they're probably going into the grand jury here the next couple
of
months.
I'm going to go way out on a limb, Eric, and say you don't agree with what Pat just said.
Look, I don't. And all the emails have now been released, if I'm reading this correctly. And there's no there. There hasn't been one email that has suggested a law was broken, somebody's security was questioned or compromised, or some secret was revealed. And let me just say this again, let me emphasize it. All the emails that have been designated confidential after the fact, none of them were sent by the secretary. They were sent to her. So this suggestion that there's some nefarious conspiracy or some great crime that was committed, where's the victim and where's the act? It doesn't exist.
The United States of America is a victim when the Secretary of State, whether she sent it or received it, has a legal obligation not to have that information on a private email server that the Russians can.
Why don't we go after Colin Powell and Condoleezza Rice, too? They did the same thing.
No, they didn't do the same thing. And Colin Powell on Meet the Press said he did not do the same thing. He had a separate email server for himself, but he didn't mix top secret classified information on that particular server. So that's not true that Colin Powell or Condoleezza Rice did what she did. She set up a separate server in her house so she could receive emails. Chuck Todd said this morning, likely to avoid freedom of information requests because she didn't want anybody knowing what she was doing. Worst case scenario, there's been national security breaches. So, yeah, it is a serious thing.
But you say that, but there hasn't been any evidence
there's 2,000 emails that have been classified top secret or worse.
That were sent to her.
She's Secretary of State.
She didn't create the act.
It doesn't matter. She read it. It was on her server. She didn't have an obligation at that point as Secretary of State to be able to make the evaluation. That's top secret information.
Well, it was designated as such after the fact.
Doesn't matter. She's secretary. Look, that's not what the law is.
Let me step back from this. Hillary Clinton may lose this election, sure, because any election's a choice. She's not going to lose it over this issue. I don't believe it.
I was just going to say, do you think voters are caring less and less about the emails?
I do.
No matter, even if there was some big revelation that comes up now with all of the Trump hoopla?
I think they're more concerned with the size of a candidate's hands right now than they are with this kind of false accusation.
But here's the thing. Flash words matter. And flash words to the general public are investigation, are criminality, are FBI, are security, are things of that nature. People may not want to dig down deep and figure out whether or not these emails had legs specifically.
Sure.
But if it's more trouble related to trust and believability for Hillary, that's a problem for
her
campaign.
It is a problem. And look, I'm not... The trust issue has been a factor for her. There's no question in this primary season. All I'm saying is I don't believe this whole email.
I just don't think rope-a-dope is going to work this time. I just think it's a bad strategy.
It's not rope-a-dope. Everything's been released. They're completely cooperating. Everything's being said. So, look, I think it was handled poorly from the beginning. I'll acknowledge that. I think I have acknowledged that on this show.
Yeah.
But I just don't think there's a there.
All right, when we come back, I'm going to ask
Eric,
both.
I want you to get on the Trump bandwagon like I am.
Drumpf.
D-R-U-M-P-F.
I think I've almost got you there.
I want to talk about President Trump in just a second. Again, I just threw up my mouth a little bit.
Every time you say it.
When we come back, is he the Acme? Remember the Bugs Bunny cartoons? Everything was Acme. Is he the Acme bomb to blow up the Republican Party as we know it? Is he the guy? Maybe that's the whole mission. Maybe that's the whole reason he's here. Maybe I drank too much for breakfast. Eric Adelstein and Pat Brady are here. Is he the messenger? Is Trump the guy to blow up the Republican Party, and does the Republican Party need to be blown up? Is that the message, Pat?
I think he could potentially blow it up. I mean, there are a lot of people. We just heard Congressman Kinzinger is not going to support him. I publicly, not that I matter that much, but I would never support him. And I think I probably represent a lot of people that don't want to support him. But I think from the chaos and the confusion might come some clarity and a chance to get the party back to what it used to be, which is the conservative party, which talks about how you apply conservative principles to solve people's problems, from crime and poverty and national security and things that we used to talk about. Now we talk about Donald Trump.
Is he good news for America and Democrats?
No.
Or is he bad news because he could be very bad for America?
Well, I kind of agree with Pat in the clarity thing, and I don't cast this over the entire Republican Party, but there's a wing of the party. Pat Brady is not part of it. The things that Trump says, and we've said this before, he's just more explicit. This has been an undercurrent in an element of this party, not Pat's part of the party, and sort of this kind of racist, xenophobic scare tactics has been going on a long time. And in some ways, having it transparent and in the open with Trump, maybe it is a cleansing thing and can get out of American politics because it's out in the open. But they're reaping the whirlwind right now, and I don't know where it ends up. The one thing I would say is, and you know, I think it's noble and respectable people like Pat and even Congressman Kinzinger to say they won't support him. But you're going to have major Senate candidates, like let's say a Mark Kirk, Kelly Ayotte in New Hampshire and others who may want to run away from Trump. But there has to be a president of the United States. How do you run for the United States Senate and say, I'm not supporting Trump? And then the next question is, well, who do you want to be president? They're not going to say they're for Hillary. I don't think they get to run as a Republican if he's the Republican nominee and get away with just saying, I'm not for Trump. Well, who are you for?
Well, you got some key governor's races as well.
Well, absolutely. You know, too, though, with Kirk, and I agree with that to a certain extent. Kirk had to do that when he ran for Congress, when Alan Keyes, remember Alan Keyes?
Yeah.
That was running here, which probably is an equal disaster to Trump. And
he's the guy that rented the post office box and claimed he lived here.
That was a great move. Yeah. Mark got 40% more of the vote in his congressional district in the 10th, which is a hard one. So I think there's a way to do it. You do have to thread a needle, but let's not kid ourselves. Trump's a disaster for the national ticket. I've said before, we've made huge gains at the state legislative level, governor level, the House and Senate in the last 7-8 years, and we're going to blow it all with this guy. And the only good thing I see right now is potentially brokered convention, get somebody else, or just start over.
But let me ask this, Pat. You look at the delegate count, it's not that far off right now. Why is it sort of a fait accompli at this point that Trump's the nominee?
I agree, and Chuck Todd was on earlier, and he was talking about Florida and Ohio. We need to stop him there, but you know what? You need to stop him in Illinois, too. There's right. A lot of delegates here. But it's just, you know, these things are their momentum games, and that's if you really kind of chart it out. But we'll see. A couple good points he made about closed primaries. Illinois is not, but the other
Florida.
Ones are Florida. And a lot of those angry people, I think, are not just Republicans. They're independents and some Democrats have come over. So in a closed primary, it does make a difference. But
even if you have a broker convention, it's still a disaster for
Oh, it's a train
it's
wreck.
A mess.
It's a train wreck. Unless somehow somebody like Paul Ryan comes in as the savior. But
right.
Otherwise, it
but Trump doesn't go away quietly at that point either, right? If he wins the majority of the popular vote and a plurality of delegates and they deny him the convention? Oh.
It's a bad.
No, there's no real good other. The only saving grace is that the Democratic candidate is weak and is not attracting a lot of enthusiasm. And that's really our only hope. But if Trump's the nominee, we do not win. And it'll be tough otherwise.
If Trump's the nominee, Pitt, do you see, I guess, negative implications for, say, the Mark Kirks and the others who are going to be the other Republicans who are
sure,
going to be on
the ballot? Sure, because in Illinois, as Eric knows, the presidential turnout is completely different than the non-presidential year turnout. Last time Mark won in 2010, it was a non-presidential year. It was a good year for Republicans. But he always overperforms what people think he's going to do. But Mark's somewhat unique. Not everybody can do that.
The governors and Senate races aside, we still have the Supreme Court question. It's ridiculous that the sitting president of the United States can't name a nominee that the Republicans would act on. It's another example of the circular firing squad that the Republican Party's become. They're talking about a judge from Iowa as a possibility. She doesn't appear to be a candidate that would be passed through very easily, but she also doesn't appear to be a candidate that would be such an obvious choice the Republicans look ridiculous by turning her down. Are you guys hearing anything about Judge? It's Judge Kelly, I think, isn't it? Is that her name? Jane Kelly, is that right?
I believe it's Kelly.
Being in Chicago, I'm always for Irish judges.
Yeah, I'm sure you are. Yeah.
When you get those parking tickets.
Exactly.
Right?
Yeah.
70% of the vote.
Because the thought would be Obama would pick somebody that's a slam dunk. The Republicans right. have to agree or they're just playing politics. This doesn't appear to be that kind of person.
I mean, there have been a lot of names floated. I think, you know, early on it was this talk of people who'd already been confirmed by
what
the Senate.
What about Lynch, the attorney general?
Loretta Lynch, I mean, 97 to nothing, the Senate approved her as attorney general. The problem is then you have an attorney general confirmation fight as well as a Supreme Court
fight.
At
the same time that she's contemplating the decision on whether
That's
or not
right.
to take the referral from the FBI on the email gate.
It's a little bit weird, but I do think there's other appellate court level judges that the Senate, with Republican votes, have approved Obama recommendation. So, look, I think the McConnell overreached, a huge mistake tactically. It made it just reinforced the obstructionism. I mean, you can wait till the nominee's picked and then pick them apart. But this notion of, you know, they're just across the board, doesn't matter who he nominates, we're not going to consider it. I think it was tactically stupid.
And plus, there's a billion ways to kill a nomination.
Right.
You could stretch it out and never have to talk about it.
Right.
Mark Kirk, give him credit, was the only one that said, no, we're going to let this go.
Right.
Yeah, well, it's your constitutional duty. And again, this is no slam on anybody that believes one way or another, but it's part and parcel to the reason the far left and the far right are the problem and not the solution. Take a breath. Take a step back. You can't say you honor the Constitution and then say, unless it's something I don't want you to do. And that's what the Republicans are saying.
Who knows? He might get the Democratic equivalent to Souter. So you never know how these guys turn out.
I'd take Judge Judy at this point.
I mean, look at all the Nixon appointees that became very moderate, almost, you know, liberal judges by today's standards. So,
yeah, I agree. It was bad.
How about this?
Politics.
How about this? The Republican Party decides no matter what happens with Trump, he's out. Trump sues, because I don't know if you heard, he's really popular of suing. It goes very quickly up the ladder to just short of the Supreme Court. It gets into the Supreme Court, but we don't have a new nominee yet. We're tied at 4-4, and it gets kicked back up to a lower court decision. Then who decides who's president of the United States?
Eric,
I don't know.
Eric and I do. We'll
I'll
figure
be
it out here
Toronto.
Between
seven.
No, we got it. We got it. We know a guy. We'll figure it out.
Before you guys leave, let me check in with Ross on the poll. The question was a question of trust.
Yes.
Who do you trust the least?
Yes.
What were my choices?
Bernie Madoff, O.J. Simpson, Donald Trump, and Hillary Clinton.
And who are the leaders?
With 22 votes cast, Donald Trump is polling at 50%.
Mm-hmm.
Hillary Clinton at 23%.
Mm-hmm.
Bernie Madoff, the guy who swindled life savings, is at 18%. And O.J. Simpson, the murderer, is at 10%.
So Trump and Hillary are trusted less than O.J.
and
Bernie Madoff.
Yeah.
Ladies and gentlemen, America 2016. So, and by the way, if you don't think 22 votes is enough to matter, that's currently what they use as a base for all the polling. 22 people. It's 8:01. We'll come back with more in a moment. I want to thank Eric Edelstein and Pat Brady. And you guys, as usual, a group hug before you leave.
See you. Thanks,
Steve.
Back after this on 720 WGN.